Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now here at Guitar Nerds Podcast, quality is very important to me. I spend a lot of time editing the audio for each episode so it sounds as good as possible, and so naturally a very important part of that is the microphone I use to record with. I'm very fussy, and so recently when we switched to using the Lewitt LCT440, it was after spending some time with the mic and making sure that I was happy with it. It's a great mic, it's very affordable for what it is, and it will get you through almost any situation you can throw at it, from recording brass to vocals to amps to podcasts. Check it out at lewitt-audio.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Good evening, Mr. Joe.
Good evening, Mr. Matt. Good evening, listener. Hello. Well, good day, listener. How are you? How are you doing? Welcome back. The 43rd episode in season 3 of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. First one with just you and me. In a little while, Matt, we've had a slew of guests.
We have. We've had many a guest. And now just back to boring old Matt and Joe. No, it's good. It's nice to it's always good to have guests. I mean, if regular listeners or new listeners have got any recommendations on who we should have next, who we should reach out to, do you know someone we don't know? Then perhaps let us know and we'll try and get them on. I think we've we were talking to Joel and Scott Chase Bliss, so hopefully
we were supposed to sort that, and then stuff came up. We were all... I think all Joel of the four of us were in separate places at separate times, and then Joel had a kid, didn't he?
Yeah, so I think, there's a few things conspiring against us on that. I spoke to a friend of the podcast, Mr. M. Demas.
Did you?
Today.
He's just... They've just... Skindred have just launched a new video and single, I see.
Dear listener, you should go and check it out. He was complaining about, he's like, got to play Wembley. And I was like, well, you know, mate, it's the kind of thing you signed up for. we were talking about guitar pedals and that. And there's lots of guests, lots of people we know in the industry, lots of new people we need to meet. There's always many a pedal maker out there that we could talk to. But I thought Philip was great. It was nice doing that. Yeah, it was nice doing that cross collaboration of podcasts, like the amount of collaboration beers that you see. and they're always pretty good. So maybe get Blake back on and we'll do a bit of that. Have we ever had Ryan? Have we ever had 60
Cycle?
We've
never had Ryan. We need to get Ryan on, really. That would be good. Get Ryan and Steve on. But
60 Cycle Nerds.
We still haven't chosen what we're going to do for Gear of the Year this year, and we could potentially have Blake and Philip Carter on alongside you
we
and me.
We could. That would be very good.
It's not a terrible idea. I really enjoyed having Philip Carter on. Dear listener, if you don't listen to the 40 Watt podcast, please go and listen to it. Obviously, it's one of those podcasts where Philip always interviews people, and I think that means he talks a lot about other people's stuff a lot of the time. But he actually has, like, his own gear is absolutely brilliant, and so it was really good. It was really good to have Philip talking about all his stuff.
Yeah, I kind of had to switch off when he was talking about the gear that he's got. I was just insanely, insanely jealous.
Yes.
I was like, what? And now I've joined the Novo Facebook group. He's like, yeah, there's always people putting stuff up for sale. I'm like, no. There's lots of people talking about the awesome Novos they've purchased. And I'm sitting here with a guitar lost in the post. So, you know, sort of...
That is,
you know,
still lost. That means it's gone now, isn't it? You're waiting for... Because Fender are also out of stock now, so you can't even get the guitar now.
I know. It's... I think what I might do is have it delivered to my parents' house and then get them to wrap it up and present it to me for Christmas as my own Christmas gift.
Oh, well, so you will get this is, dear listener, if you didn't hear the episode where we were talking about it, Matt has purchased a Fender Ed O'Brien Stratocaster.
I just, for the longest time, ever since we reviewed it, I was like, that is the guitar.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I just want one of those. And I like the idea of the sustainer. I like all of that stuff.
It's actually a good workhorse with a few interesting features. For me, neck was a big win.
It is actually just an amazing guitar. And I mean, that's the thing. And like you say, really chunky neck, amazing to play. Love the addition of the sustainer, you know, right up my street in terms of kind of spec and guitar. Debating whether, you know, I'd put a different scratch plate on it, perhaps.
Oh, really?
But, you know, overall, I was like, that is it. And I was like, I'm finally saved up some pennies. I'm like, I'm going to bite the bullet. And it's bit me in the ass.
It really has.
Although I've literally Googled, as we were talking, Ed O'Brien. And someone has literally listed one on eBay. And I'm
there
like,
you go.
I'm like, well, maybe.
Maybe just get that.
Maybe.
Maybe you could just get that.
Maybe all my... In fact, two people have listed them for sale. I bet you one of them is the one that got stolen. Yeah.
look up the guy's name. See if he works at UPS. Whoever sold.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll be like, do you work at UPS? I mean, I would rather wait for a brand new one out of the box, but I'm waiting to see. I'm waiting to see where. When I may be able to get it. Well, but ultimately, this person here, Mr. UPS Stealer at ebay.com, seems to have many things on there. Right.
Yes, of course. Well, it will turn up eventually, Matt. But you know that's not the only thing you've been looking around for on secondhand purchase websites. You've come across some incredible things which you definitely should be purchasing. I'm really going to push you into purchasing this one, Matt. This is just not something you should pass up.
I know. So moving swiftly on to our what's in the watch list. And it links into another topic we'll discuss shortly. But someone on Reverb this week has listed...
Dave. His name's Dave.
Dave, his name is Dave. Dave's shop. I know Philip was always like, oh, you know, you've got to, there's some things you can tell people and some things you can't. And I'm like, look, someone just needs to buy this because it's a ridiculous price for what it is. Someone is selling a electrical guitar company, EGC Basics Conversion. It is basically a Squire Basics body with an EGC solid aluminium neck. In the correct E to E tuning, so 30-inch scale.
Absolutely.
£1,500. Expensive shipping, but I'm not surprised because it probably weighs an absolute bucket load.
Well, the basics are heavy, as you know, Matt, from owning... Well, you've owned two already.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I have. But this, my oh my, this is something special in my opinion. I don't know if they did that mod or whether it's...
Well, you just buy a neck and bolt it on, surely.
Yeah, I guess they just bought a neck and bolt it on, but this is, I mean, that is just awesome.
It's very cool. I've seen this done before, certainly, and I've seen other aluminium companies, because of course, as soon as you've got aluminium necks, it's kind of popular, that sort of baritone guitars, lots of doom, down tuning, big long sustained notes, and bass sixes are great for that. So it's not unusual. You know, we've seen lots of people do it, but this is great. I actually think the bass six looks fantastic with the three aside headstock that electrical mm-hmm. guitar company do. I think it just sets it off really well. The strings on this, obviously, dear listener, I'm just looking at a picture of a bass with strings, but the strings look like absolute cables. And I know I know they are thick on a bass six, but they look huge.
You don't need to bend strings on a bass six. Even I've realised that.
Well, I mean, you do not. You shouldn't bend them because they're still so... They're a light gauge for a short scale bass scale, so you bend them a little bit and you've knocked them like 2.5 tones out.
Yeah, yeah, true. There is actually someone else in London selling exactly the same guitar, bizarrely enough.
Oh, really?
Although I think this one is... No, I think this one's the same, but yeah, heavily modified. It is the same. But electrical guitar company, Bass 6, Squire EGC, so EGC neck... With a Squire Bass 6 body. 24-100 on the old strings.
Oh, that's what
there.
He's gone for. Very cool. That is very thick. That's what... is that what I have? Yeah, I think mine go to 103, the set that I've had put on. But
so which Bass 6 have you got? You've got the... Have you got Classic 5 or have you got the original one?
The original one? Which is the Vintage Modified. In fairness, now, we know Vintage Modified, dear listener, were made in Indonesia. They've discontinued all that stuff now. They do only the Affinity stuff, I think, comes out of Indonesia now. And China is where they're making the Classic Vibe. It's where they always made the Classic Vibe. But essentially, other than them being built in a different place, the only difference between a Vintage Mod and a Classic Vibe is that they sorted out the bridge. They got rid of the Vintage Correct, weird, you know, the rollery thing. I don't know what you call that, the Vintage bridge, but it doesn't work. We all know that it doesn't work.
Crud.
Yes.
Absolute
rubbish.
Crud.
But of course, I just swapped that out for a normal Mustang bridge. Maybe the pickups are different. I've actually heard people say that the Classic Vibe pickups are supposed to be a bit richer, fuller, more articulate. I would certainly say that the pickups aren't up to much on my Vint mod, but I've never really sat down with it enough to modify it. Like, whenever I play it, I'm trying to emulate what Jack Bruce did with it in Cream. So so it kind of, you know, I want that muffled sound anyway, so it's not the end of the world that the pickups aren't great. But certainly it's such a good instrument, and because the Classic Vibes, they're like whatever, £450 new, it means that they're what, like £350 second hand, and that just means that if you've got one of the old Vintage Modifieds, which were of course cheaper, they're just not worth anything anymore. So it's hardly worth me ever moving on the Bass 6. I might as well just keep it and modify it, because I think they were like £279 new, the Vint
mods.
Yeah,
something like that. They were pretty cheap, weren't
they? Exactly. So I should do some stuff on it. I'd always, because Jack Bruce's Bass 6, he'd ripped out the pickups And was it just a neck pick of it? I can't remember, but it fitted like Gretsch style, the, you know, the Fidelitron style pickups in in the, certainly in the neck position on his bass six. So I like the idea of doing that, like totally changing the type of pickup you get in a bass six.
Yeah, well, I actually, funny enough, you say that, because I've bought a new scratch plate.
Oh yeah.
But I haven't bothered putting it on yet.
This is your Shell Pink matching headstock.
This is the Shell Pink matching headstock classic vibe bass six. I haven't put it on yet because obviously you've got to take the bridge and everything off. You can't. It's not like a Strat where you can sort of like lift it off and slide it off and then sort of, you know, undo the pots and then just put a new one in. And I'm like, actually, what routing is it underneath? Can, do you know what the your one is?
I've never taken the plate off. That's interesting. I wonder if it's swimming pool under there.
I don't think it is, but I'm going to lean over and tap my bass six very quickly right now. It's definitely not. Nah, it's pretty solid under there.
I see.
Because I was just thinking, I was like, yeah, imagine. So basically, over the weekend, yesterday, very, very rainy day. In England, certainly in London, and I was sitting there and was just like, oh, you know what, love this basics. And I was playing it. I was like, but feels like, you know, I wanna upgrade it a little bit. Like, what can I do? You know, classic boredom.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
spend
money on my guitar. And Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar did a little thing. I've just realised this is all the way back in 2016,
right, wow.
But I think it's still relatively relevant now. Basically, here's some things that you can upgrade, and I thought I'd get your opinions on what's worth doing, Joe, but also I looked around at some of these options already before the podcast, and I am amazed that how many companies out there that make either pickups or hardware are totally, totally sold out. I know there's been, you know, constraints and various things on parts, and I don't know if it's just demand for things like bass six bridges, but the companies that make bass six bridges or pickups or anything are just like, yeah, it's like a 16-week wait.
Wow.
I know. Amazing.
I mean, you could go to someone bonkers. Like Sunbear and have them, you know, make
well,
you
Well, I think... I think I probably will. But yeah, I thought I'd run you through this quick list, see what you think. And actually, the first one I think you'll probably already agree with, Joe, and I'll get your thoughts on this. Strings, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. So the ones they come with are now 24 to 84.
Which is a joke. An 84 on a low E. Like, that doesn't work. It doesn't work.
And that's why I think it rattles so much on the low E string.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel great in terms of chords. Like, that E doesn't feel kind of
half
very
the
beefy.
Time you knock the string off of the board because it's just so slack.
Yeah. Yeah. So so they recommend a set of, and I think you said the same, Joe, but 26 to 95s. Is what they were strung up with in 1961.
Well, so say that gauge again.
26 to 95.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Yes.
And I wondered if a 95 would comfortably fit in the nut without recutting the nut. I don't know how big of
I think it absolutely would. You've got to remember, I don't know this for a fact, by the way, but I'm pretty sure when they were 26.95, but I think bass sixes came out of the factory with flats from Fender. I don't think they were rounds. So the the tension is going to be tighter anyway.
Right. Okay. Well, interesting. You say they came with flats originally because this article from 2016 is still linking out to. Oh, in fact, actually, it has sold. I thought they hadn't sold, but someone was selling a NOS box of original factory unused bass six strings from 1961.
Wow.
£139.
How many strings? But it has sold, has it?
All six. Oh. Yeah, it's all sold now, but it was a complete set of bass six strings from the early 1960s. And an NOS complete set of flat wound Fender bass strings from the early 1960s, including a spare first high E string, individually packed in the original parchment envelopes that have the appropriate box checked identifying.
That's the sort of thing I would have bought. So
I thought they were still genuine. They were still for sale. And I was like, no, I'm going to buy those. I was like, yeah, you know, because it feels like basics. You're probably not going to change the strings.
So go flats, get flats. It's what that instrument needs anyway, I think. I mean, I don't know, if you had an aluminium neck on it, then yes, maybe you should think about a sort of a going up to 100 grade and keeping them like, you know, round wound or stainless steel maybe. But you should, if you're going for strings, for a basics, I know this is my favorite string brand, so I bang on about them, and I know they're expensive, but Labella, they do a set of Fender Basics flat wound strings, 26 through to 95, which is what you were talking about, the originals. They're £95 for a set, £94.99. But you will never buy another set. You know, so there is that. If you wanted to go for rounds, Labella do a round wound set in the same gauge, and that's only $69.99. So a bargain there if you like rounds.
An absolute bargain. But yeah, I think if the nut will
definitely
take it,
I think that
would be the first thing that I will do. Although they do recommend slightly later down that you should change the nut as well, because I think a lot of those guitars have got relatively cheap nuts in. But the second thing, and this is what I spent the most time looking at, was the bridge.
Right.
So the bridge on the Classic Vibes is what you say. It's the Mustang saddle. So they sit in,
and
the
you can't really
groove,
adjust them. They're just from one end or the other.
Yeah, basically they don't have much travel. But interesting, they say that what they've done, obviously to save costs, is it's just the same Mustang bridge that's on the Classic Vibe vintage modified Mustangs as it is on the Base 6. And interestingly, the difference there is the width is different on the original Base 6s compared to obviously the ones they've put in to save money. So you can actually buy a Base 6 wide bridge that drops straight in, slightly wider, and balances the strings out slightly better.
I see. Apparently. I didn't know that. That must be a very subtle thing, though, to still fit in the same holes.
Yeah, it says the original 1-inch width of the big part of the Base 6, which translates to more flexibility when it comes to intonation. Original examples of nearly twice the saddle travel as the current part. With the Base 6's 30-inch scale, every little bit is precious. The bridge found on the current Base 6 is essentially the same as other vintage modified offsets, save for adjustable micro Mustang-style saddles, which have deep grooves and the ability to set the radius of the strings to match the fretboard. It does, however, have a propensity to rattle around so much that even correct offset setup techniques may not quell it. What to do? Either track down an original bridge? No. Staytrem. Staytrem are a British company. I had not heard of them before. They make a specific wide Base 6 bridge with two sets of saddle spacings. So I think actually, Joe, what it is actually the whole bridge piece itself is wider. Although it sits in the same posts. And then you can get two different saddle widths. So two different like millimeter each.
Oh, this bridge is
spacing.
So much better. I've just found it. It is £90, which is a chunk for a small bridge. You know, when you think you can pick up a Mustang bridge for £20.
Yeah, I think the good thing is that they have a 12-week waiting list, you don't need to pay until they've made it. But yeah, I'm seriously thinking about ordering
fantastic.
One of these as a point to start. You know, I just think, again, the bridges do make, you know, that all-important contact with the string makes
a big
difference, I think.
Okay, so strings, bridge, would you go to Trem? Would you change the Trem?
Well, this is the next thing. So, obviously, once you start going to Trem, most of the things they recommend are things
Mastery, Descendant.
And I'm just like, I basically don't use the Trem. So I'm sort of like, how much difference would the Trem piece make versus just, you know, doing the bridge? But then again, if you do the bridge, so if you do the Mastery like bridge and Trem system, is it not worth just doing the whole thing with Mastery? So doing the whole vibrato and then having a mastery bridge on it as well. The problem is you can't buy mastery stuff
anywhere.
No, you can't seem to get it. Nowhere seems to do it in the UK. Everywhere that does seem to do it is sold out. And I just ordering stuff, unfortunately, now for us British folk, ordering anything outside of England is a right pain in the arse. I ordered a guitar pedal from a friend in Spain, and it's cost me £50 in import fees. And I just think a $200 bridge with $50 shipping, I'm like, how am I going to pay another $50? I'm going to pay as much as the guitar cost
to put another when you put it like that,
And I'm like, that is it just feels a bit silly. But you just can't seem to buy mastery stuff in the UK.
Weird.
Which is weird. I thought James's Home of Tone did some stuff, but I don't think they do.
There must be alternatives to mastery out there, though.
Yeah, I don't know. And I wondered if you had any suggestions.
I don't, because I don't use the Trem. I don't even know where the Trem arm is for my basics.
Yeah, I think mine's in a box somewhere.
But, dear listener, if you've got any suggestions for alternative vibrola systems for a basics or any hardware brands that we should be keeping an eye on, that would be really cool and really helpful. So do let us know, either, you know, message us, however, on any of the social medias, put it in a post on the Facebook group and the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. But let's have a chat to tell us about things we don't know about.
We need to know. I need to know specifically. So I might do a stay trim. I will definitely buy new strings. I'm sort of undecided on the flat wounds, Joe. I guess for chords and stuff, still fine.
I mean, if flat rounds aren't really your vibe, then £95 is an awful lot to spend on
a set of strings that you're just never. Well, can you, have they got resale value?
Maybe. But you know, you could easily go to one of the custom shops for a set that probably wouldn't cost £95. You know, you'd probably be looking at £60, but you'd probably go to String Joy someone like that to make up a set in those gauges, and then you can still get like a nickel set of round wounds.
Yeah. So
that might be a better bet for you, I think.
Yeah, I think. Well, actually, dare I say that Jeff Bezos has got your back when it comes to cheap prices on lapella strings.
Oh, really?
Yeah, £45 for a set of the round wound strings on Amazon.
Wow,
for basics. That's
very cheap.
The flat wounds are still £75, but so strings definitely, saddle or bridge definitely, trem. Not so sure unless someone in one of the listeners has got some suggestions. And the next thing, Joe, basically, I mean, they say don't worry about the tuners. Don't need to worry about the tuners. The tuners are absolutely fine, and I'd agree. It stays in tune very, very well. Is pickups and electronics. And talking of James's Home of Tone, our good friends over there, they actually do a pre-wired harness for Bass 6.
What?
Upgrading all of the parts, capacitors, pots, switches. I just don't feel very confident soldering the last little bits in at all. Last time I did that, it still buzzed like hell. I think,
really?
Interestingly, like, the you know, the wiring's cheap, the pots are cheap. I don't necessarily, you know, the guitar, the kind of the basics does sound good. And then I was like, oh, I could upgrade all the electronics, but I thought it's only worth upgrading the electronics if realistically I change the pickups. And this has led down a rabbit hole of many of the recommended brands being completely out of stock. I'm just so surprised. They must be insanely popular. But the brands that have come as recommended are Curtis Novak, The Creamery, Lola Pickups, or buying three of Fender's AV65 Jaguar pickups.
That's very cool. That's a cool idea.
Because I think, again, waiting to speak to you on this, Jake, are they basically the same pickups that are in a Jaguar?
I think so. I mean,
they're
not
like a different... I don't think they're like different magnets or different housing. Because I would imagine when they were built originally, they were like, what have we already got that we could use?
Yeah, I mean, they were released at the same time as the Jaguar, you know. So,
yeah.
So probably, I don't know for sure. I mean, you might want something that's a bit more full range, but it really depends what you're doing with the Base 6. If you're using the Base 6 as a baritone guitar, then actually a Jaguar set of pickups are probably great. If you're running it through guitar amps, they're probably great. Mm. If you want it to a bass job, then yeah, maybe you want something a bit more full range, but I don't think that's what you're
doing. Yeah, that's a good shout, actually. They say the Curtis Novaks are the best for the kind of Jack Bruce-style vibe, which I thought would be right up your... your street. I did think about, of course, reaching out to our friends at Sunbear Pickups and saying, like, what could you make? Go crazy. And then that got me down the idea of thinking, like, imagine a Base 6 with three TV Jones in it.
Yes. Yes.
And I was like, that would be awesome.
Or like a Charlie Christian, like three Charlie Christians.
Ugh. Getting close. It might as well just be a Fidelity at that point. But yeah, definitely, I think just want to put some new pickups in it for funsies.
Yeah.
My
opinion on the pickups is, even if you just change one, I think it would be really cool to root out a different, you know, pickup size in there just to get some different sounds. But you know,
maybe you'd be right. I'll just get a chisel, a hammer.
Why not?
And then a different scratch plate could be quite a fun project. I definitely want to use it more, but I honestly think the biggest difference I could make right now, which is what you said earlier on, is the string gauge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember when I had those stock strings on there, it just barely feels playable. It's on the low end. It's just really hard to use. So getting some decent string tension on a Base 6, I think, is really important. I also, like, put the action up, like, miles up, which I thought helped, you know, make everything feel a bit more robust.
Right.
And a bit less buzzy. But, you know. But then, as a bass player, I'm used to high action. I don't know how guitarists handle that.
I always just... I guess I've gone with the default... As lower action as possible without buzzing. Not the Joe Branton method of you could drive a bus under this.
I'd like to be able to fit my little finger underneath.
Oh, God. No, thank you. I've just also double checked some pictures, and they are definitely three single coils
right
in there. Okay. Very cool. But yeah, maybe Sunbear could come up with some fun ideas. Wire that all in. Could be quite good. And then, as I've searched for that, I've got recommended. I think we talked about this before, Joe, but I've just been recommended from a seller in the UK on Reverb a Fender Rascal bass.
Yes, I saw that there is one on Reverb at the moment. I was very tempted by it. It is expensive. Bear in mind that instrument was $599, $699 maybe $749. Yeah, well, I think when it came out. What is it now? What does he want for it?
$1,350. I mean, Reverb's pricing guide, November 2019, $550. October 2022, $1,200 was the last one that sold.
Yep, there you go.
Absolutely, absolutely crazy. First review. Sold it, had to buy another one.
You have lost money.
Yeah, but I think I'm going to go down the route of giving it a little bit of a mod and messing around with it a little bit. I think, you know, it's a great guitar. It just needs a few extra tweaks,
definitely.
I think.
Definitely.
And I think the strings will probably make it. I think the strings will probably make a big difference. And yeah, I might order one of those new saddles. You've got to wait 3 months. You know. It is what it is. It's basically Christmas. You know, just get it after Christmas at some point. Might arrive in time for my birthday. Who knows?
How about it? Yeah, there you go. Well, it's definitely worth it. Base sixes are an awful lot of fun anyway. A fun thing to just have around the house and, you know.
Yeah,
just have something a bit different, you know. Otherwise, everything's all the same.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's why I like the little Bronco bass. You know, as well, you know, it's just good to just pick up and just have a jam round on, really.
Yeah, they are great. Having a little, yeah, a little Broncos, obviously. Sorry, dear listener, we've gone into a bit of a bass off here. But yes, you know, I got my 1977 Fender Music Master back out the other day, which I've got a McNelly replacement pickup in. And it just sounds great. Great for like a little, just a little short scale bass that sounds fantastic with a bunch of drive. Like, you know, just a good aggressive instrument. I do love it very much.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's very, very cool. So, yeah, I'll let you know how it goes over the next few weeks.
Yes, exciting. Exciting. Well, you know, Matt, we're going to try this this new bit that we of the podcast. We're going to see what people think. Should we do that now?
Absolutely. Why don't we?
So, dear listener, we were gonna try sort of showing you a few sounds like in an episode, not just me, you know, playing something pre-recorded, but actually sort of, you know, picking up an instrument and playing some stuff. This actually helps as well because I'm kind of putting together a bit of a board. I need an octave fuzz at the moment, and I would actually like Matt, your opinion, and dear listener, your opinion as well. I've kind of boiled it down to two octave-y sort of fuzzes that I really, really love the sound of. And they are the Honey Badger by Redbeard Effects, and the fuzz, the modular fuzz by Jackson Audio, which I just have the original circuit in, whatever that one is.
Wait, did you get it off me?
I did.
I can't actually remember what module I put in it. So you've got it with a mystery module.
I've got a mystery module, yeah. Well, I guess you'll hear sort of thing. So I've got my little Harmony Juno with me, which only the neck pickup works on my Harmony Juno, and so it's that all the time. You get no tone on a Harmony Juno, but the pickups are so thick and chewy, so you know it's just got a great tone. I'm running it into the Victory Amps Copper, the V4 Copper, which is their little desktop amp, which is their version of like a Vox AC30, and it's just great.
Joe,
yes,
it would be, I assume you would take this as a compliment, but that tone is very reminiscent of a kind of I would say a Hail to the Thief era Radiohead.
Oh, yeah.
You got going on there, Joe. Kind of that sort of distance. I mean, when you played it to me before we started,
yeah,
I was like, sorry, that reverb sounds like a proper splashy amp reverb, like you're using an amp with spring reverb, but that is all the pedal, right?
Yeah, this everything is, yeah, the reverb's up just over halfway on the V4. So it's a digital reverb on it, you know, digital power section, obviously, dear listener, and it's just a valve preamp on the,
and then just going straight into the interface.
Yeah, just going straight into a little Scarlett 2i2 actually, and then into your ears, dear listener. So there's nothing else going on here, sort of editing wise. And but you're right, it's very much got that that Radiohead, that. It's that very Radiohead-y. It's sort of Tom York's kind of guitar tone, I think, a little bit. So he gets a lot off of that lovely 60s SG that he plays, which I think is always on the. Or it always sounds like he's very much on the neck pickup on that.
Yeah. It sounds good. So I think for the listener, we basically want to know what demos are like. We want to be able to you know, we get stuff on the podcast and we want to be able to play it, and
yeah,
you know, we don't want a whole podcast of you listening to our sort of like average playing, but you know, just to kind of give you a flavor of some of the things we've had and talk about it in a way that maybe no one else is really doing.
No Exactly. So I'll show you a couple of the... So, dear listener, do let us know. And obviously, we'll get Matt to do a few of these as he's a much better player than me. I wanted to actually do some bass demo things today because I'm a much more confident bass player. But I haven't quite nailed recording setup for bass straight into the interface like we're doing right now. Just, yeah, I tried a couple of things before we put it today. Wasn't anything I was 100% happy with. And I was like, well, maybe I'll try a guitar thing. Plugged in this, the Victory V4, the copper. And I was like, oh, this just sounds absolutely fantastic. So I did like that. But anyway, so I am in a bit of a fuzz dilemma, looking for a sort of a very, very chewy, thick, glitchy octave fuzz. Boiled them down to these two. This is the Redbeard Effects Honey Badger, which is a great sort of interesting, versatile take on octave fuzz, especially because you've got that divide control where you can choose how you're blending up like two different octaves, which is very, very. I think that's what that does. But it is very good. Here's this is.
It went a bit quiet at one point, Joe. I don't know if you turned the input gain down. I don't know if you're worried about blowing people's ears off or whether that was TriCast automatically dipping your volume.
Potentially.
It sounded very, very good.
Yeah, so that is that's the Honey Badger. This is the is the Jackson Audio modular fuzz with the mystery module in it.
I wish we could remember what module we'd put in it.
I mean, it surely says on the module, right?
Take the back off and have a look. I mean, I really love the Honey Badger. The nice thing is, yeah, you've got bypass on and off, octave on and off, so you can switch that octave in and out, which is a really nice little touch. Separate control for treble and bass, which I think is always essential. That's what I always liked about the old Boss FZ2, was that you had that treble and bass control. So if you wanted to go for your kind of, is it Wizard? Is that the name? That's not the name of the band, is it? Why can't I think of that really famous Doom band that uses FZ2.
I don't know.
FZ2. Why can I not think? It was terrible. But yeah, if you kind of want that super boomy, super bassy sort of like doom sound, that's always good to have that extra bass control. Or if you want to cut through a little bit more, you can. So I think that's nice having those EQ controls on there. But ultimately, yeah, I think it's nice that you can switch it in and out. And then the divide control, as you say, goes between two octaves down or one octave down. So it's kind of having that sort of element of a Boss OC2 in there as well. And the two octaves down will always give you the extra subby glitchiness.
Yeah, which is exactly what it does. I really love it. Obviously, they're different in that one pedal's giving me an octave up and one pedal's giving me an octave down. So they're very different in that sense. But I know there's something that works really well about the Honey Badger that you don't normally get when you're sort of octaving down with a fuzz.
Yeah, I think it'd be good to remember what module we put in that thing. But it sounded very, very good, and I was always super impressed with both of those. I mean, the Jackson Audio one was really good, and I like the idea of I sort of do, and I don't like the idea of modular pedals, because I think once you found something, you're going to stick to it, and I don't think in the studio you're necessarily going to change modules, and then about 2 years later you're going to go, oh yeah, you can change the modules in it, and then you'll change your module, and then you'll go, does it? You can't A-B it, if you know what I mean. It's always one of those things. So I think you just plug it in and go with it. But I think if you went on the glitchy side of things, and this is for you to run a bass through it, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, OC2 on bass always sounds really good.
It does, it does. I mean, I have an OC2 has a permanent place on my pedal board.
So I just, you know, I think maybe Honey Badger might give you a bit of that OCT vibe with fuzz, or just use the two together, OC2, and then stick your favourite fuzz pedal in there.
Yeah, that's true. That opens up things like the Frederick Effects Unpleasant Companion, the Fuzzrocious Little Fella. That's another favourite of mine. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think the Unpleasant Companion, is that got slight octave up in it, or is that
it
just...
It does, yeah. It has like a... not one that you can dial in, but it has it. It's there. It's a presence.
Yeah. Because then when you mix that with something like an OC2, you get this kind of real synthy, you know, almost that Jack White sort of vibe we talked about last week, of sort of having, you know, when he was using a Pog, and you've got a down octave and an up octave and fuzz all at the same time. It's sort of, that's good. I like that. Yeah. You know, it gives you that kind of, almost like a synth kind of sort of effect, really, in some ways.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I want, that big, thick, raucous, almost synth-esque, dynamic-less kind of tone. But we'll see. Let me know what you think, dear listener. Which pedal, if either, did you favour as an awesome-sounding fuzz? Well, I mean, the reason that I'm sorting this out is actually because I'm off on tour very soon with Polymath.
London, Hull, which was the tour poster I saw once when we played a gig. And I'm like, this band is on tour. And it's like, yeah, London, Hull, London. It's not really a tour, is it?
No.
It's Tour of London, that's for sure. But where are you playing, Joe? What amazing places have you got coming up?
Well, we're playing. We've got Brighton, hometown Brighton, on Friday, and then London, which is our big launch show on Saturday. And then actually, we've got a couple of days off, so I can come back and record the podcast. And then we're back off for another couple of weeks after that. So I think we're doing I'm trying to bring it up so I remember what my tour is, but we're playing, yeah, so Brighton, London, and then I think we're doing Bristol, Birmingham, and then we're off to Liverpool, and then we go across to Ireland, where we'll play Cork, Belfast, Galway, and Dublin, and then back across for Manchester, Newcastle, Leicester, and Sheffield.
Wow.
So a few.
All the places.
Sorry?
All the places.
All the places, yeah. Yeah, that's right. But it's going to be really good. Really looking forward to playing London. We're playing in Signature Brew, the Black Horse Road Signature Brew, for those people who know London, which is a wonderful, lovely venue. And we've really nearly sold it out, which is great, because it's a big old venue. So we're very, very happy about that. And that'd be great. We'll have our records for sale there, our new album, Zenith.
Can you buy this on vinyl, Joe? And why have I not got one?
yes, it's you can pre-order now the vinyl of Zenith. But it's great. It's us trying to be. It's my band Polymath trying to be a bit more concise. So all the songs are like 3 or 4 minutes long. It's our first thing written as a five piece. So we've got the sax player as well as our keys and synth player now. But it's really tight. It's got some great guitar tones on there. It's the first record that we recorded with Tim's Fidelity, so he's got that P90 bridge pickup loaded Fidelity with just where he just has a toggle for tone on or tone off. And nice. He's basically the entire album is more or less kind of two sounds for him. It's either the Keeley Synth 1 synthesizer pedal doing this this sort of crazy sort of auto wah-esque thing, or it's a Redbeard Effects Angry Rhubarb doing a real sort of nasally cocked wah sort of tone.
Nice. And what about you, Joe? What was the key bits of gear for the record?
The record I recorded half on a fretted and half on a fretless jazz bass. So I just took my lovely 60s, you know, sort of heavily modified jazz bass that I've recorded an awful lot of things on. So I've got that loaded up with a pair of EMGs. So that was about half the record. The other half was a fretless jazz bass that I have loaded up with Aguilar 60s style pickups. And a lot of it's that with like a cloth beneath the bridge to get a real sort of almost double bassy kind of tone underneath everything. Lots and lots of phaser on my bass on this record. That's standard subtle bass effect.
Subtle movement in the background at all times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just a slow MXR Phase 90. I just love having that on. And actually, I recorded the entire album, Matt. The bass amp is the Boss BB1X.
Excellent. So no amps.
No amps. No amps for bass, no.
I think, was it Jay Cross that said, "Oh, Joe, great bass tone." And you were like, "Yeah, it's an EMG loaded jazz bass into a Boss BB1X." And he was like, "Oh, maybe not then."
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, but then again, you know, like the very short demo you did there, I'm like, that sounds great. And it's just a, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Just
preamp pedal with a solid state, or you know, class D little power amp straight into an interface. I'm like, yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you can get the tones, doesn't matter what you've done it with.
Yeah, I think you know, interestingly, I was in the gym the other day, and I was like listening to the first Rage Against the Machine album, because I think it came on in a random playlist. That's like, oh, Joe, I'm just gonna play the album, because it's an amazing album. It's great. Yeah, great sound, great bass sound on that record as well. Tim Conifer's bass sound is just awesome. I don't think he was playing
music. He played jazz basses first, and then he moved to Stingrays after a while.
But how much mixing, you know, does bring obviously a track together, but also changes sounds quite considerably as well, because you listen to, like, actually this year I didn't realize there was Rage Against the Machine XX, which is the 20th anniversary, and it's the whole album as demos,
right?
And the guitar sound is still the same setup, but obviously when it's just kind of not had the polish that the kind of that record's had, it sounds totally different. And also all of the vocals are recorded through what sounds, I think they were trying to emulate, like, Zach de la Rocha basically singing as though he was, like, shouting through a megaphone at some sort of, like, rally. So everything's got, like, a slapback delay on it, and it sounds like he's about 10 feet away from the microphone. Right. It's very weird, but you can obviously hear the beginning of that track. But, yeah, I mean, everything sounds good, you know, or anything can sound good once you've recorded it and mixed it and brought it into the track. And I guess it's about fitting in with the mix ultimately, isn't it?
Yeah absolutely.
But I didn't realize you recorded this with Mark Roberts as well.
I did, yes. Yeah, this album was Mark Roberts. We recorded dear listener, Mark Roberts is a fantastic producer in Brighton, a friend of Matt's, friend of ours. He's produced most interesting music that's come out of Brighton over the last sort of 5, 6, 7 years or so. Including like big bands you might have heard that he's produced, Black Peaks, he did their stuff, and of course he works with Rabia on almost all of Rabia's projects as well, like the Totemist, Rabia's latest band, and Tosca and Dorje. So he's really good. It was really nice to work with him again, because he did a single for us once a couple of years ago, so it was nice to get back in a studio with him for a whole record and see how that went.
And where did you record it?
We recorded it at a place called The Ranch, which is in Nursling, just outside of Southampton. Dear listener, if you're in the UK, and especially if you're in the South Coast and you're looking to record an album, I can thoroughly recommend it. It's a really lovely studio, or pair of studios, which has a building attached to it, which has dorms in it, so you can stay over. It's right out in the middle of nowhere. Lovely big converted barn, like huge room, great little booths for you to record brass and stuff like that if you need that sound to be a little tighter. Lovely big drum room. And some really nice amps, really nice gear, some Novo guitars, if you want to play those. But, you know, Tim got to record the entire record through an old 60s Vox AC30, you know, pretty much, you know, absolutely slammed at full volume. It was it was wonderful, you know. So really, really nice place, and you know, it didn't break the bank too much either. So it was
good. How do you so this, you know, for someone like me who's not really ever been in the studio and really ever recorded much, but I've always got this idea of just playing everything kind of live. Like, how do you normally do it? Do you just do like a guide track and then record solid drums and just all play over the top of it? I just never liked the idea of like sitting in the control room, like playing through monitors and then like recording the track over. I'm like, sure, you want to be in the live room and you want to be feeling it and you want to be there.
Yeah. It's different for kind of each instrument and stuff. And so it depends what sort of a band you are. Like, because we have so many time signature changes and tempo changes in songs, before we even go to the studio, we will map out all of the songs. We will create a click track to give to our producer of everything. But we also like doing jam band stuff. So we might write in, we might write in 32 bars at a particular BPM in a particular time signature, and we won't write anything for it until we're in the studio, and we'll sort of, you know, we'll mess around with that a few times and just so we can have some organic sections. Right. But yes, it's actually one of the reasons that I recorded without an amp was partially because we wanted to record as live as possible, and there weren't enough, you know, rooms for us to mic up a bass amp and also have a sax player in the vocal room. The keys player could go in the drum room next to the drummer, because of course his keys can all just go straight into a box and we can reamp them later, because we obviously reamped a lot of the keys through that same Vox AC30. And then and then Tim was able to record guide guitars down on running through like his Boss Katana, because we can use the direct out again, so he can just have it in his headphones. So the keys player, Tim on guitar and me on bass, all sat in the drum room, because we could have our instruments just on cans. And then you can do the eyeball stuff with the drummer to work out where you're taking things, when you're bringing things up or taking them down. So yeah, totally. Recording as live as possible is so much fun, and you get an organic edge that you won't get otherwise. But yes, you do also have to do that tough bit. You have to either do reamping or replaying things in. Obviously, for a guitar, that's the thing you have to do. That's going to have the most additional parts, second layers, background guitars. You might just do the same part a second time, maybe with a different type of guitar, just to give it kind of a different edge, maybe, if you're panning or messing around with things like that. So there's a lot of that. You know, you have two solid days of just doing guitar doubling and little extra bits and bobs here and there.
Right.
But yeah, it's so much fun. I love the recording process. It's always really good and really interesting. It's always fun to do the organic things and just see what happens, see where it goes.
And then you've put on our very rough script, Joe. Should I take my 69p bass on tour?
yeah. That's
talk to
it.
Me, Joe. What are you feeling?
Well, we went to, me and Tim, the guitarist in Polymath, we went to see a friend of yours and mine, Matt, Graham Wheeler.
On the weekend. Do you know what? I really, side note, I haven't spoken to Graham for ages. I need to catch up with him. Basically, I just remembered this was a side note from the guitar show. So I caught up with Matt from Monty's, who should definitely have on the show again. He's great.
We should.
So they've moved to Cheltenham now, so they're much further out of like London and stuff. And he was like, yes, you know, it's only him and then a guy called George. They're basically, and they're pretty much, their sole business is just the pickup stuff now and the accessories, which is what I think Matt said he'd always wanted it to be. And I was talking about repairs, and he was like, yeah, I don't really do repairs anymore. I will do some, but it's a 12-month wait list if you want your guitar repaired or set up by Matt. I'm sure if you speak to him, but I'm sure he's also going to hate me if I was like, definitely say it's 12 months. I mean, obviously, if you really want to go to him and speak to him, I'm sure. But he's just like, look, we just basically the pickups, and that's what we want it to be. And my usual place, or what has been my usual place in London, Stairway to Kevin, great guys there. They're so busy that they won't take on any fretwork anymore. And I'm like, maybe I should just see Graham and I should get him to do it. But it's a bit of a mission for me. But
yes.
Yeah, would I really want to get my we spoke about it before, but I really want to get my MIJ Strat re-fretted. I think I definitely think it needs it.
Not just a fret polish, not just a...
No, some of the frets are so worn down, and I'm like, I could probably get it. I think realistically I want it re-fretted, and then I want the frets re-profiled. And I know, like, oh yeah, ruin it. And I'm like, yeah, but if I'm going to play it, I'd rather have it totally playable. And I honestly think it's that fretboard radius that's making it difficult for me, 7.25, where everything else I've got is basically 12. I realised that the other day.
That's very, like, very different.
So, but anyway, you went to see Graham.
Well, dear listener, Graham Wee, there is a fantastic tech. Whose tech did he used to be?
He used to. So he wasn't Eric Clapton's tech, but he used to do all of Eric Clapton's guitars. And I think he ended up doing one or two once, and then they were like, "Oh yeah, loved it." So he just he's done it ever since.
Well, he's lovely, and he doesn't live too far from me, because of course, dear listener, depending on how long you've listened to this, you'll know I moved out to the sticks, to a little village just outside of Brighton. Graham actually lives in the next village, so it's not too far for me to go and see him. So
I didn't know he was that close.
We see each other every now and again. I'm always taking him guitars and stuff and having a chat. Sorted him out a record player the other week. You know,
you've got about 100 of those kicking around.
It's just under 100 record players in my garage. It's awful. But anyway, Tim wanted to go and get a couple of his guitars set up. He has this, Tim plays this Epiphone SG. It's a right-handed SG Pro, Epiphone SG Pro in Silverburst. But of course, Tim is left-handed, but strings right-handed. But because it's a right-handed guitar, all the controls would be in the way of his arm. So he's had Graham, and of course, Tim hates neck pickups or any form of control. So Tim's had Graham take out every single control and wire the pickup direct to the output, so there are no knobs on there. Oh, and take out the neck pickup. So there are just all these holes in the guitar where the controls would be, and a big hole where the neck pickup would be. And that's Tim's SG that he keeps in Fripp tuning, which is the perfect fifths, like a violin, from a low C to a high G.
New standard tuning?
That's what it's called. Yeah, that's what it's called.
Go on. I was going to say, because Robert Fripp and obviously his wife have found sort of newfound fame on YouTube. But also Robert Fripp's been doing more stuff on his own YouTube channel, Robert at Home, and was watching some of that a little while back. And he was like in the studio. He's like, yeah, this is the first time I've played in... He was doing something in standard tuning. And he's like, this is the first time I've done something in the standard tuning since like 1987. absolutely bonkers. But because he plays... Is it Crimson Guitars or something similar? He plays one of them, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. They have a signature model.
Because I think they're not too far away from each other, right? Because I think he's down that way, Devon way, or
something like that. But yeah, he has that, and he has his Les Paul. But of course, he's got like a Floyd Rose loaded Les Paul, hasn't he? So it's
And I think he's just put out a new tutorial book as well, which I think is what's
very cool.
But new standard tuning. I mean, is Tim very? I was going to say mathematical. That's not the word I'm thinking of. Is he very theory driven, or does he just work it out as he goes along?
He just works it out as he goes along. Actually, one of the most difficult things for Polymath is that we switch between two guitars. So we have either D standard, or he has new standard tuning. Those are his two. And I will play in D standard or in drop C, depending on which tuning Tim's using. But crucially, because me and Tim started the band, and because we've always worked with each other and spoken to each other, and we were doing it from being quite young, we never changed the names we say for the notes from standards tuning. So we still call D, or if we're playing the other guitars, C, we would still call that E. And so when we got our sax player in, who, of course, sax notes aren't the notes they are because of... Do you know this about saxophones? You know,
I do not.
So the note of that you call it a saxophone note isn't the note that it actually is. The reason is that they needed to fit all instruments on a treble clef, basically, for orchestral stuff.
Right.
And so they wouldn't be able to do that because the sax would be all over the place. So it's just very difficult for them. So for our poor sax player being like, what key's this in? And we'd be like, yep, this is in D. And it's absolutely not. It became very, very confusing. And we quickly had to learn to actually talk in the proper notes and not in our own sort of weird language. So no, the short answer is Tim is not very technical at all. He's just, you know, just plays a lot of guitar.
I actually think, yeah, I mean, you know, theory can be a blessing and a curse. Mm. I don't know. You know, when you're writing riffs and you sort of don't know. I mean, that's the interesting thing. It's like listening to Polymath again in the gym and kind of listening to Tim and those riffs. And you're just like, yeah, I guess you just... Theory can kind of go, oh, well, I can't do that because I've done that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
almost like you need to know the rules until the point where you know the rules well enough that you can bend them, I guess.
That is actually it. People kind of say this, what you're saying a lot, I think, that not knowing theory is freeing because you're not limited to doing stuff. But I kind of think it's more, it's got nothing to do with whether you know theory or not. It's the type of player you are. And if you stay in the rules, within the rules, then yes, you are going to sound boring. You are going to sound like everyone else. But if it doesn't matter whether you know them or not, it's whether you're willing or not to try something different.
Absolutely. But yeah. Well, I look forward to listening to the new record in full, Mr.
There you
Branson.
Go. There you go. Well, we'll talk about my 69p bass a bit, but we're going to do that over in the Patreon episode because we've come up to time on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, dear listener. So join us over on patreon.com/guitar nerds. Maybe we'll answer some questions as well. We've got some great questions from the Facebook group, as always. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you'll get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special and our back catalog. $10 will get you the lot, plus I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favorite social media platforms, join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, and get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Anton Fry and Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Danny Walker, Jorrit Brown, Andy Hoffler, Ollie Simpson, John Conway, Russell Healing, Paul Drew, Peter Pesh, Ty Allen, Yogi the Guitarist, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Eric Emma, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einzer, Gavin Van der Linden, Andy Manley, Mark Zau, Katowacki, Simon Milborn and Stuart Robson, Eric File, Joe Prantic, James Dorr, Abe Matthews, Kytopia, The Band, Russ Edwards, Stephen Burke, Dave Lee, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loseth, Derek Rich, oh, Blake Wild and Rob Lord, Think, Shady Shop, Steve Merkel, Annie McKenzie, Brad Page, Robin Smith, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, and Mook Gravitt.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.